come third at this year's UTMB was just amazing, and something that I'll definitely cherish and remember for a long time. But then also on the same kind of token, I did finish, you know, quite a wee way behind second and first place. I'm definitely not resting here.
Kia ora everyone, that was Scotty Hawker. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. I might have peaked at a few pubs in my time, Eugene, but I've never done a peak to pub.
Peak to pub, what is that, Matt?
It's for the Faster.
Yeah.
Sponsoring the Peaked Pub, which is an annual race held in the Canterbury ski season area in the hills, ski season. It's in the ski season, and it basically involves tearing hither and yon from the top of Mount Hutt ski field to Methven.
Ah, see, from a peak.
Yeah, and why
to
would
the
you
pub.
Why would you go to Methven to drink? And you do that on skis, and then on a bike, and then running.
Really?
Yeah, it looks, I mean, it does
it looks
look
epic.
It looks sick.
Yeah.
If you go to, and Further Faster are all up in this, they're involved in it. If you go to peaktopub.co.nz or go to furtherfaster.co.nz or pop into the store to have a chat to one of the team, they'll be able to sort you out. And also, they carry an amazing range of outdoors gear, including all the lovely montane wear that keeps us dry and warm. So check it out.
They'll have all the gear for Peak to Pub.
Yeah, except the bike, like that. That really appeals to me, except I can't ski.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you come in like a third of the way through?
I could get Dave Jack on skis.
Yeah.
And I could do the bike and the run.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it looks amazing.
We could practice at Riverhead.
We could. There's no snow.
No. No mountain.
No. Anyway.
Is there a pub? There's a pub.
There's a pub. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. So if you go to peaktopub.co.nz, and try to erase the dross of this ad from your mind, you'll be suitably inspired.
And go to furtherfaster.co.nz and get yourself in gear that will make you forget the dross of this ad.
We love you.
Even better. Thanks, Further Faster.
Do you know I've eaten all those gels?
That was a massive bag. Are they all gone?
Yeah, no, I have. Like, I'm down
seriously?
To like the last... Yeah, no, I actually have. I'm down like the last two.
Wow.
Yep, so we got a big bunch of My Spring Energy stuff delivered, and I've gone through them like a bandsaw.
Mm.
And really loving feeling nourished,
yes.
And not like throwing up, and recovered after my runs.
So good.
Real food.
Real food.
Yeah.
Real
food. If you
go
to myspringenergy.co.nz and use the code DCRSpring, you'll get 10% off any of the range of real food gels that Spring Energy sell.
Because it's not just the gels, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
They've got like an apple-y ginger electrolyte drink.
So I had that on the weekend.
It's delicious, eh?
It is so delicious.
Yeah, like
I actually
ginger.
Felt like a little bit guilty.
Yeah.
Like I was enjoying a delicious drink
yeah,
instead
absolutely.
Of a sickly electrolyte drink.
That's right.
Yeah. It was actually really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
MySpringEnergy.co.nz. The code is DCRSpring. Yeah. You help us out. You help them out. And you come away feeling full, satiated, the foods, the gels are nice, they taste
electrolyted.
Like, they taste like what they say they taste like, and everyone's happy.
Everyone wins.
Did you wear your pack on the weekend, bro?
I tell you what.
Yes.
I was running in my new Zygos.
Four. Yeah.
Four.
Yeah.
Brooke Van Renen was running in his new Zygos Four.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We were double Zygos 4-ing it.
Zygos gang.
Which is not Zygos 8.
Yeah.
It's just two Zygos 4s. We were the Zygos gang. We were the best kitted out runners.
Handsomest.
Handsomest.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was worthy of the old goat, whatever that
greatest of all time. I wore mine today. They're really, I can't, Ultra Spire are just fantastic. And they
so comfy.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fitted, the everything's accessible.
Yes.
You don't have to scramble around and take your bag off
no.
and everything to reach.
Super important when
things.
You're doing missions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even if you're just running across an urban trail in Auckland, as I was, you know, I'm sure that people were stopping and staring at us.
Yeah, well, you've got to have somewhere to keep your moe and cocaine, don't you?
You do. And they're perfect.
14 litres, you can get a lot of moe and cocaine into the back of a Zygos.
You can. You can.
Not that I'm suggesting that you throw it off a boat in the harbour and let it float down to Whenuapai and or Riverhead.
No, don't do that.
That would be inappropriate. But don't look, ultraspire.co.nz for the goods.
That's right. By the way, I don't drink.
But you do a lot of cocaine.
I do. What? Dipshits Radio.
I desperately want to hit one of those samples.
You're not. Don't keep your bloody mitts away. Episode 60, we're not going to go near samples right now. Holy moly, we made it.
Oh, we did. We made it. And we're recording for the first time on our brand new, Eugene's brand new mixing board. And it's got built-in, like ours. Ableton, yours, sample
don't
pads.
Don't get your hands okay, away anyway. From them.
Anyway.
Hey, 60 episodes.
60 episodes.
That's a hell of a lot of yakking away from us.
It deserves a round of applause.
Nah, wrong one.
Damn it!
Yeah, I thwarted you. Hey, in all that time, we've hardly ever had a mix-up with timing, with talking to guests on the other side of the world, which is very, very tricky, but, you know, this time around.
Yeah, no.
We did it.
I mixed that up really badly.
No. It was a joint thing, and put it this way, we had hoped to talk to Scotty Hawker a week ago, but... You know, international datelines and stuff. But we have him this week.
Yeah, Eugene spoke to him yesterday.
I don't know. Time zones?
I don't know when you did either, but...
It was yesterday.
Cool.
What a story.
Yeah, what a story. Third at Ultra Trail Mont Blanc.
Yeah. So we talked to him about the whole, you know, the high of that, having come through the low of last year, plus some really... I'd read and heard an interview with him where he talked about the race itself, but I hadn't realised that he'd sort of struggled for so long with that pain that he was suffering from. 35 kilometres, sorry.
35, that's a long way.
That's a long, long way. And so he talks really openly about that, how he dealt with it, you know, what it takes to get through those sorts of problems in a race. There's a hell of a lot to take away. No matter where you are in the field, no matter what distance you're doing, there's a lot that he gives away in terms of wisdom, racecraft, and training and approach to running.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to trying that strength workout that his physio got him doing.
Mm, yeah, so yeah. Hey, the feedback from last week's show, frankly, has been a little overwhelming.
Yeah, I think the feedback that these men and the program staff at Odyssey House have been getting is 150%. Deserved. I wanted to double down on my rant from last week, and just what we didn't do and what we should have done is say, if you are struggling with substance use, be that alcohol or any other drug, or if you have a loved one who is struggling, you could go to somewhere like Alcohol Help, alcoholdrughelp.org.nz, and that's 0800 787 797 in New Zealand. Or you can text 8681, that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you or someone you love is struggling with problematic substance use or the beginnings of substance dependence.
Yeah, because there is help available.
There is. Mm. And I'm going to say it again, I think that these voices are ones that are seldom heard, people who do have substance dependence. It's almost seen as a, well, no, it's not almost, it's seen as a moral failing in some quarters, which is patently bunk, and there for the grace of God go I and, you know, most of us. And we're thrilled to have been able to bring the story to you.
So the story of the Speed Freaks and from Odyssey House, and particularly Ray and his korero, it really sort of touched, got people in the feels.
Yeah,
and
it did.
So they've been overwhelmed with people reaching out to them, offering gear, so much so that, you know, our friends at Further Faster in Christchurch have offered to accept donations on Odyssey House's behalf. You know, so if you go into the shop in Christchurch, there's a box there to accept donations for those amazing runners at Speed Freaks. So, you know, like a huge thanks to Jules and the team at Further Faster and Rocky, yeah. And, you know, and to Ray for talking to us so openly, to Stephanie and Anna at Odyssey who arranged our chat and have been coordinating the response to it. It really is a bit overwhelming, to be honest.
Yeah. Aroha nui, big man. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So speaking of reaching out, Kirk Bakes, who is Friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Yep.
Fellow feelings nurse.
He is.
Yep.
He sort of brought our attention to something, didn't he?
He did.
Mm.
And that is the Bali Hope, which organises an ultra marathon with a bit of a difference. It's across Bali, putting on the Unity Ultra on March 15th next year as a response to the Christchurch massacre. For those of you who know Indonesia, I think it is the world's most populous Muslim country.
Yeah, it is.
And everyone goes, oh, Bali, Bali, Bali. But yeah, yeah. It's a country founded, rooted deeply in the faith of Islam. And there's an ultra marathon that's going to be going across.
Nope. That one.
Yeah.
So that one, the Unity Ultra, goes from Akaroa to Hagley Park, 51 miles.
Damn it.
So it's a three-day event, and on day two they have this 51-mile ultra to commemorate, of course, the 51 lives lost on March 15. So their regular ultra is across Bali, and this one is an extra to specially commemorate Christchurch. So, you know, it's a, you know, if something deserves a moment of reflection.
Yes.
That's what happened on March 15th.
And I misunderstood that, so I apologise.
No. Basically, that show rundown, whoever wrote that should be fired. You know? Oh, that was me. Okay.
Whoever didn't read it should be fired.
No, I didn't write it very clearly. See, this is sort of the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Church Radio.
Yeah.
Falling over ourselves, apologising. That's since right. Forever.
Yeah, if we could come up with a laugh gag thingy, we would. No, don't do it. Anyway. Tour de Chance.
Yeah, Jason.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, I don't know. Sure you did. Jason Koop.
Yes.
Guest from a couple of episodes ago. He of the amazing amount of training, his philosophy and approach to training is something that I'm, you know, becoming more enamored with every turn of the page of his book that I'm reading. And he came 27th. Mm. 330 kilometers, 24,000 meters. A vertical game.
And he wrote on the old Twitter, I definitely felt it out there. What an experience highlighted by a full 5 to 6 hours of spontaneously and uncontrollably passing out on the side of the trail. Holy moly.
Yeah, if you go to his Instagram, there's also a video of him just crying uncontrollably at the last sort of refuge.
Wow.
Yeah. Incredible.
That's tough, man.
He left it all out there.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a record in the women's field. John Kelly of Barclays Marathon fame came 16th. Nikki Spinks was in there as well, I saw. Yeah, so it knocks people around. It's a really, really, really tough course. Interesting that it's, you know, it's around the time of UTMB. We talk so much about UTMB, and then there's another event that just sort of takes UTMB plus.
Well, it takes UTMB to school in the fact as well that I think it's much more technical.
Yeah.
And it's far longer. Mm. It's largely climbing. Unsupported, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Wow. Hey, speaking of Jason Koop, you're the 6x3 guy.
I am at the moment, and that's why if you were to have a window into the much more studio-looking Dirt Church Radio Studios at the moment, you'd see me. I look like I've been dragged through a hedge backwards.
You look tired. I don't know that you look...
My hair is unkempt. I'm not even wearing a belt. You know, like I'm not wearing shoes. I came in what I had. It's I've never felt tighter after a week of training.
But tired, good tired?
Oh, I feel so cardiovascularly able, but structurally demolished.
Right. So is it the kind of tired that you feel when you're building something?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's so good tired.
Good tired.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at around and you see how, like, you both commented when I came in. You and Suzanne went, damn, son.
Mm.
Yeah.
You did
I mean,
tired.
I've just come off a run of morning shifts, which are always hard as well.
Yeah, that's
getting up
right.
at, like, 5 to get to work and stuff, so.
Yeah. So they've been, tough. You did 3 sessions of 6x3s last week.
Yeah, really interesting. And it's a really, I guess, getting into sort of running minutia. But, his approach is really interesting. So whereas in the past... and, you know, this is something that I haven't been ready for. I've had a coach for, you know, James Kugler, put in a lot of work with me. It was really amazing. Whenever he'd try to emphasize the stuff, I'd sort of push against it. But I think, so it's not sort of his approach, but it's just me being ready for it.
Understanding.
But what Koop says basically is if you train the least specific thing first. So at the moment it's like it's a block of VO, you know, VO2 max increasing workouts. So that's intervals.
Mm.
And that's beating. So it's not just doing like an interval one day and then like a tempo run and then so it's sustained. And they load up and then over the course of the block they get less and less.
Right.
So you start the most rested and then you adapt. So if I'm thinking correctly, I'll get faster.
Yeah.
And they'll be harder, yeah, but there'll be less of them. And wow, then it goes through into like tempo runs and then steady state runs towards, yep, the end. It's really interesting. I mean, I'll see if it pays off, you know, yeah, like, but it's I, for one, and I know that some of you are reading the book or, you know, there's many different ways of training. It's really nice to feel kind of excited and a bit of trepidation about a training process.
Definitely, definitely.
How about you, man?
Yeah, man, I had an easy week after, I had a four-week heavy block. You and did. So I like to just back off for a week. So I did a total of 3 runs last week.
Sweet.
So that was nice. But I'm back into it now.
Yeah.
I'm really fizzing to go, actually.
Yeah,
really looking forward to it. Got back on my bike, my commute to work.
Sweet.
To add in a bit extra cardio, but not putting pressure on. Had a nice easy run this morning. Did some timekeeping duties at Parkrun on Saturday.
Nice.
Spotted Brendan finishing, I think he was 3rd in his DCR t-shirt.
The firefighter, right?
That's him. You know, so, you know.
Sweating in the cotton.
You get the old Dirt Church merch and you get an extra leg of pace.
Hey, thanks to all of those people who have bought the, or did buy the Dirt Church merch, and I'm seeing it all over
including social Australia.
Media in Australia and everything like that. Really cool. And for those of you who have seen, we got a beer.
We got a beer. There's been a little bit of speculation because we foreshadowed the fact that we were going to have some more merch. People have been speculating about what that merch might be.
Right. What have some of the people been saying?
Action figures.
That'd be wicked. Yeah.
That'd be ridiculous.
I'd like a He-Man one. Like that, not that size, but you know, like the Masters of the Universe ones. They just have, it'd be generic. So just that generic would be me and you. It'd look pretty similar.
Right. I saw some video of me running yesterday and I kind of look like a transformer.
Right.
Like sort of ungainly and sort of just with this.
Robotic.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sword you carry.
So maybe that's one for me. Yes. But it's beer.
Yeah, it is.
We should have a drum roll.
From Halitau Brewery, they have produced us a bunch of very nice IPA. And it's labelled very nicely with a shot that Eugene took of the back of my head, which is, those of you who know me, my best feature.
Oh, whatever.
And, Dirt Church Radio Beer, interesting beer for interesting runners. Now, Grant Guys has got a box.
Sharing that on social media.
Some boxes winging their way to them. And we'll be taking it to some finish lines.
Yeah. So, obviously,
we're not bootleggers. We can't sell it to you if you come to Eugene's back door.
No. Yeah. Can't do that. But we are going to share the love, basically, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. So, keep an eye out for that. But I was just going to say, I caught up with... That's a terrible segue. I was just going to say...
Sharing the love? No.
Yeah. Well, I caught up with Brooke Van Reenen.
Yes.
So, I ran with him on Sunday. So, he of the Running Te Araroa Trail... Mission.
Yeah.
He started 26 days ago, or today is, I think it's day 27. He's having a rest day today, Monday. But he's come down from Northland, and he described it as, his mum and dad have got a camper van, and his mum's got a map book that's got 6 maps of New Zealand on it.
Nice.
She's finally been able to turn the page.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a nice way of... charting your progress.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I reckon.
Mum can turn the page.
Mum can turn the page.
So he's 1/6 of the way through. So he was in Auckland for a few days, and he had basically a trail angel, Jenny Hurst, who did an amazing job arranging people to run with Brooke, put him up in her house, fed and watered him and looked after him. And so I went out for a run with them, with Brooke and Jenny on Sunday, with another couple of runners, Bronwyn and Neil, and I had a chat to him afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't make it. I mean,
did that pose on One Tree Hill for you.
You did. It was good. It was a good pose, a strong pose. So, yeah, his mental health takes just no Saturday, Sunday breaks.
No, that's right. You can't take a break. We looked out towards the west and said, Matt's out there.
There he is.
There he is. But yeah, here's a bit of a quick chat with Brooke. Dirtchurch Radio. All right, joining us again on the show, Brooke Van Rienen, 3 weeks into his Te Araroa mission. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. So we did a 20K run this morning from Queen Street to Mangere Harbour, which was pretty cool. Did the urban version after being in the bush yesterday, which was pretty cool. It was cool that you came in out and ran with me as well.
Yeah, it was good fun. It was good to catch up and see how you're going. And I was amazed how strong you're looking, and you know, you look fit as a fiddle.
Yeah, well, I think it's the trail. It's like everything's been thrown at me, you know, like trail wise. There's from tramping track to beaches to main highways to, yeah, everything's in there, and a lot of it hasn't been running. It's just been a lot of hiking and just kind of grinding it out and getting the days done, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But you seemed really positive, and you know, I think, you know, you were talking about your mum having that map that shows that she can now move from one, you know, she can finally turn the page on the map that she's been following along with the camper van. So you're making good progress.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, well, I've set myself kind of an itinerary each day, and I'm kind of following a bit, but some days it's pretty hard where mum can pick me up, so I might have to do a bit extra or a bit behind, so I'm not too worried about that anymore. But yeah, my body just has seemed to get into a good rhythm, and I, every morning I'm kind of fizzing because there's been no day that has been the same, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've had some magical days, and we've all enjoyed following you along in your social media, which is great that you're keeping that up. But you mentioned when we were running today that, you know, it's not just the running that's challenging you, it's all those other things. It's the logistics, it's, you know, making sure you get in the rest, it's eating, and then you know, meeting people and all sorts of different ways that I guess you don't think about when you think of running Te Araroa.
Yeah, and a lot of it's been quite cool, good for my confidence too. Like, I'm a pretty shy person in general. In the last few days, I've had a few people come out that don't know me. But at the end of the run, you know, we're all friends, and it's all everyone's there for the same reason. They all love running, and it's all just turns it. The kilometers tick away when I've got people, which has been awesome. The last 5 days from having no one in Northland, and so it was pretty awesome to catch up with a lot of people down here.
Yeah, yeah, and it's quite social, isn't it? We were having good chat, and there was a group of us, and you had Jenny, your sort of trail angel, really, hasn't she been?
Yeah, definitely. She was awesome, and she put me up for a couple of nights, and she set me up with other people to run with that I've never met before, and then we spent 2 days together about 5 days ago now.
Brilliant, brilliant. And you got the chance to meet the sort of, I guess, the father of the trail, really, Jeff Chappell.
Yeah, that was awesome. So the other day, mum and dad know him quite well, but I only remember him when he first came through, when he was putting the trail together for the first time. And it was a pretty special time going and staying with him and his wife Miriam, and they're both awesome people, and yeah, he had some pretty amazing stories that he was telling us.
Yeah, well, you're getting some pretty amazing stories yourself, and you know, taking some pretty amazing photos. You're a great photographer, so you know, it's,
thank you.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
It's a country too, you know, like it's turning it on for me, and it's cool checking out. Like, there's been places that I've gone to I've never even heard of, and yeah, everyone's been so friendly, and once they hear what I'm doing, they just stoked and amazed, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess, you know, as you said, the old people ask you, where are you running to today? Where are you running to? Oh, I'm running to Bluff.
Yeah, everything's one way, which was weird, because the trail, when you get to Devonport, you have to get on the ferry to Queen Street, and I had to buy a one-way ticket to Devonport.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, when we were standing, was it at One Tree Hill, when we looked back and you saw Rangitoto and the coastline behind you, and you sort of think, wow, I've run all that coastline.
Yeah, and it's not as straightforward as it sounds like running along the just down the coast. There's all of these little side streets and stuff that you have to go around, and so that's where it was awesome having Jenny and people that knew the route, so I could just do what I do and go running.
Yeah, we had Bronwyn giving us instructions today, didn't we, telling us when we were about to miss turnoffs and stuff, because frankly you were setting quite a cracking pace going along there. You didn't seem like the guy who'd been running for 23 days.
I guess that's the nature of it as well. Like, that's just my body's just getting used to it, and not like every morning now I can't wait to go and get going.
Yeah, fantastic. So you're going to take a day off tomorrow, and then it's down to the Waikato, heading for Hamilton.
Yeah, day off tomorrow to catch up with my Bid Food boss and go to the movies or something like that, and just do what normal people do.
Yeah, and then back into it. Well, fantastic. Yeah. I mean, give us some of the stats. So, I mean, your fundraising's been going brilliantly, hasn't it, for the Mental Health Foundation?
So far I've raised over $9,300, which is, I've almost doubled my original goal, which is $5,000, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And it's awesome when people donate, because they leave messages, and just reading the messages, you know, it keeps me amped and going, keeps me going.
Brilliant. I mean, that's just amazing, isn't it? You had that goal and you've more than doubled it, and yeah, getting all that support, it's just fantastic to see, and seeing all that sort of social media messages to you and encouragement, and it's just brilliant. Everyone's getting in behind you, and you know,
someone said after I put my post up, they said, oh, I was running past and I saw you guys.
Oh, really?
I mean, she recognised our group, and then if you see us out there, like, I'm happy to say hello to people.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's as much social as it is running. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, look, all the best. Keep going strong. You know, as I said, you're looking so strong and so fit, and we're all behind you, and you know, keep doing what you're doing. Yeah.
Thank you. And yeah, if anyone's keen, they can get in touch through my Running Te Araroa Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
Further down the line, like, Auckland's been quite tricky. It's been awesome having Jenny. Jenny's pretty much set up everyone who's come along, which has been awesome.
Yeah, amazing. It's just really
quite,
amazing.
Quite hard in the big cities, you know, too. And so if anyone out there has tried to get in touch, I mean, it's quite hard for me too, because of just logistically to do it. So
yeah,
when I can, I'll reply to people as much as I can, and hopefully we can get in touch with more people further down.
Brilliant. All right. Well, yeah, get in touch with Brooke through that Running Te Araroa Facebook page, and keep going. Well done, young man.
Oh, it's bluff or bust. So
that's for sure. Oh, and how's it? Sorry.
1/6 of the way now, so
yeah,
and I've done a few tough days, so I'm, you know, when it gets tough again, I'll just be like, yeah, been here before, we'll keep moving,
keep going,
one foot in front of the other.
Fantastic. How's the Tool album?
Still working on it, but it's pretty awesome. It keeps getting better every listen.
Good stuff. All right, well, well done, mate.
Sweet, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, sweet. For everything you guys do too.
Not at all. Well done, mate.
So there you go. Catch up with Brooke Van Renen if you spot him around the country, or you can track him if you go on the Running Te Araroa Facebook page, as he mentioned. You can see where he's up to and get out for a run with him, donate to his cause, the Mental Health Foundation, if you got some spare cash.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And more than that, again, here's the rant. You know, educate yourself about mental health. So mental health is a banner topic, but that's like saying Saturday or Sunday or chicken or, I don't know,
something up, running. There's much, it's a rich, therapeutic, many layered thing. Look deeper into it.
Right, which will segue into... Stuff you should know. So this week's Stuff You Should Know is kind of drawn from a chat that I had with Brooke on Sunday, and from what Ray was saying during our Speed Freaks conversation. You know, running is social, and it's good for, you know, in that mental health sense, making those connections, being a social animal and finding those connections with people. You know, running's got a bit of a reputation as being a loner pursuit, you know, the old loneliness of the long distance runner cliche. But one of the greatest things about it is the friendships you make, the connections you enjoy. You know, and Brooke was saying that he was a shy person. He is a shy person, isn't he?
Yeah.
But out on the trail, he's finding he's becoming more and more confident talking to people, chatting away, you know, having strangers come up to him and go, "Hey, are you Brooke? I hear what you're doing. I like what you're doing. Can I run with you?" You know, and I know that through running myself, I've made friendships, case in point.
Here we are.
This guy sitting next to me, that I would never otherwise have had.
Yeah.
It's got me out of my circle.
Absolutely.
Which is good for my mental health.
Me too.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so you can use running as a way to help you in more than just the fitness sense.
Absolutely. And I think it harks back to something that John Onate was saying as well. You know, he was saying there's also the thing that's pro-social.
Yeah.
It delays gratification. And if you're not a particularly social person, you might not be one of the chatterboxes of the group, but you can be sort of chatterbox adjacent if you're struggling or if you're so turning up and kind of not faking it till you make it, but just being involved in that social aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Really and, important. You know, I've had chats with other runners about this too, where I actually, you know, when there's a group running, I get a bit anxious, like, oh.
You do.
I don't want to come along, you know. But every time I make myself do it, I enjoy it.
Yes.
And so that's good for me. It's good for me. It's sort of showing, you know, it's because I get to go along and do an activity that I enjoy, that I get to sort of show to myself that I don't need to be nervous in those groups. Mm. I don't need to be anxious and sort of, you know, fretting and freaking out a little bit.
Mm.
And that's because of running.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
Running. It's good for you.
It's good for you.
Mm.
Go to the people.
Who knew? Right. Greatest run ever.
Yep. Which is the part of the show
where
we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It could be. But it might just be a run around the block. Something that resonated to you with you for some reason. You can send it into us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com or via our social media.
I just have to step in here with an apology.
Not another one.
I know. So this particular... greatest run ever came in months ago.
Right.
It was buried in the email. Oh. We only just picked it up. So apologies to Ellie Ernst, my mess up. But here it is. It's a really good one.
Awesome. So here we go. Hi, Matt, Eugene, and Rigby. Hello from Rigby. If you asked me 4 weeks ago what my greatest run ever was, my answer would have been the GOAT in 2014 for the journey it took me on. In fact, I started writing and saying as much. And then I had a not-so-great run on Mount Taranaki while training for this year's GOAT, rolling my ankle and tearing the ATFL. Yee. I managed to get myself 3.5 kilometres back to the car before driving home in a haze of pain, trying to distract myself by listening to the podcast with Scotty Hawker.
There you go.
Synchronicity. His message of finding the positives in seemingly bad situations stuck with me, and for the last 4 weeks I've tried to keep a positive attitude, starting by accepting my situation, my motto being it is what it is, and all the while doing as much as I could to rehab my ankle. I've had months of off running before, two pregnancies and hamstring tendinitis, and struggled with the mental side of not being able to run. This time, my approach and attitude has been different, and it's been a lot more bearable. Today, I was given the all clear to try a gentle 5-minute run. Super excited. I drove home and immediately shooed up. That's a really nice expression.
Yeah.
There's a nice grassy park full of big trees 50 metres from my house, and it's about 500 metres long. I jogged slowly down and back. It felt a bit unnatural and awkward, but so amazing to be actually running again. Today was a part of my latest journey of overcoming obstacles, a very slow, slightly stiff 1 kilometre through the park, over the road, probably my shortest run ever, but it felt like a small victory. Definitely my greatest run ever. Ellie Arntz. That's there amazing. You go.
It is. And just a bit of an update. So when I found that, and the reason I found it was thanks to Scotty Hawker, because I was searching in our email for Scotty Hawker and found this and went, what's this? And saw this greatest run ever that I hadn't, that I'd missed out on months ago. And so I messaged Ellie and said, look, I'm so sorry. We missed it. We missed it. You know, hope the recovery's gone well.
Sweet.
And she said, to update, I ran 24 kilometres at T42 and 25 kilometres at NRT.
Nice. So, the North Range trio.
Yeah, there you go. So sweet. Well done, Ellie, and glad that it has gone well. And see, delayed gratification.
Yeah, yeah.
Was worth it.
So hard.
There you go. All right. Scotty Hawker.
Scotty Hawker. Hit it, Eugene.
Right. So we spoke to him in Andorra.
You spoke to him in Andorra.
Well, you know, it's the royal way. Spoke to him in Andorra. He is obviously fizzing after his third place at UTMB.
Yeah.
But as we said earlier in the show, he's really open about the path that he's taken to get here, the changes that he had to make after what was a really downer year last year, the injuries that he suffered, the nutrition problems that he was having. He talks about all of that. I put to him some questions from the one and only Andrew McDowell, which he gave really good answers for, with some good practical advice for people. So this is not only an insight into how the elites do it and how Scotty, you know, the Kiwi boy done good, has achieved what he has. It's also got some really good advice and wisdom for you and me, for anyone who runs. So without further
ado,
Scotty Hawker. Radio. Okay, joining us all the way from Andorra is the one and only Scotty Hawker. Welcome back to the show, Scotty.
Yeah, g'day, how's it going? Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, well, you had a bit of an amazing run in between times.
Yeah, it's been UTMB was crazy. It's sort of funny to think it was only a couple of weeks ago still.
Yeah. I mean, a massive congratulations, and you know, just I wonder if I could take you back to, there's a photo of you coming up to the finish line. You've been running with Sienna, and then you just sort of stop and you pump your arms in the sky, and you're looking up, and it just seems to speak so much. What was going through your head at that moment?
Oh, I think everything and anything, to be honest. It was just the realization that I'd sort of achieved something that I had dreamed about. And it was just amazing. Like the last probably couple of K, really, to be honest. They're just the kind of the ambience and the atmosphere from the, you know, thousands of people that were lining the streets of Chamonix. And I don't know, it just sort of just hit me. I was just like, far out, this is actually happening. Like I'm actually, you know, gonna get on the podium of UTMB. So and to share that with Sienna, and then Liz, you know, soon after was, it was just an absolutely amazing experience.
Incredible. And we'll talk more about the race, but I just wanted to catch up. So so post the race, you spent a few days in Barcelona and now you're up in Andorra. So what's the thinking behind that?
My good friend Power, who obviously won UTMB. So, the plan was always, if we basically both had a good UTMB, then we're going to have a bit of a party back down the coast from Barcelona in Calafé. And we both ended up going pretty decent at UTMB. So, Power invited quite a few of his friends and family and stuff. And we had, just a bit of a party and some, you know, sort of a bit of a barbecue and stuff. And, we hung around Barcelona and that for a few days. And then, the plan was to always come up to Andorra after UTMB. And, we've done it for the last couple of years. And, Andorra for me is just, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. So, we always love being able to come back here at some stage during the year.
Yeah, because I think last time you were on, you nominated that for your greatest run ever. It was one of the runs up in Andorra, so... Obviously,
we probably would have been.
We remember that you love it so much. But I was just saying before we started the recording that looking at your Instagram feed, it's just, I mean, it looks incredible.
Yeah, it's the mountains here, because Andorra is such a sort of tiny wee country, and just where it is, like the Pyrenees, the mountains are just literally, it seems like they're stacked on top of each other, sort of thing. So yeah, you can kind of, from where you are, you can, you know, go kind of in any different direction. You're going to go up a different valley or a different ridgeline, or, you know, tag a couple of different peaks. And then, you know, if you want to drive the car 5 or 10 minutes, you kind of just have another, you know, sort of series of valleys and ridges and peaks to kind of go and explore. And yeah, it's just a pretty wild place, to be honest, compared to some of the other places. I mean, definitely, like, you know, obviously, you know, places like Chamonix, and then, you know, Cortina, where the Lavorator Ultra is, like, absolutely breathtaking, stunning places. But, you know, you're kind of, you know, tripping over refuges every 5K, and there's, you know, heaps of people and stuff like that. Whereas, yeah, Andorra, well, so far anyway, Andorra's pretty quiet. Maybe that'll change, you know, in coming years when people sort of catch on. But, yeah, it's just an awesome kind of wild place to explore.
So you get to explore it a bit more on your own and without the crowds.
Much, yeah. Yeah, you can just sort of, yeah, you can, like yesterday we went out and did, I think it was just under 15K in 4 hours. And, yeah, like we only saw like 2 people. And so it's just sort of, yeah, you can just sort of go out and, yeah, it just feels a bit more wild, and you can just kind of, yeah, be, I don't know, be in your own space and sort of just enjoy it for yourself kind of thing, which probably sounds a little bit selfish, but I guess it's just nice to kind of feel like it's just you and the mountains when you kind of can be, sort of thing.
Well, I think you're speaking to a, you know, a converted audience here. You know, that's one of the things that people love about the trails, isn't it? And getting out in the trails is just spending a bit of time on your own. So no, you're not sounding selfish at all. But yeah. I know that, you know, you mentioned that you've been to Andorra the last couple of years and that was always in the plan, but has it been a good place to go to after what must be the madness of Chamonix and what happened at UTMB?
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect, to be honest. Yeah, like I mean, I'm a, you know, really social guy, and, you know, love hanging out with friends and people. And to be honest, on the flip side of that is I do love being out on the trails and seeing people out on the trails and enjoying it. Like, it's just awesome whether people are, you know, hiking or running or mountain biking or climbing, anything. You know, it's amazing seeing people out there. But you know, obviously the week of UTMB is just absolutely bonkers. It's, you know, sort of thousands and thousands of people, you know, kind of arriving into Chamonix for the different races for the week. That's just obviously the runners. And then you have, you know, all of the supporters and the family members and all of the sponsors and the brands and everything else that are there. So, yeah, it's a pretty hectic kind of week. So, yeah, Andorra for us is kind of a chance to kind of just sort of, yeah, just sort of slow down a little bit and just sort of, yeah, not be thinking about a big crazy race. And yeah, you can kind of just sort of slowly get back to, you know, kind of life as usual. And yeah, just enjoy the pace than the week of Chamonix, I guess.
Yeah, just enjoy it and reconnect. So just can you give us a bit of a picture of what it's meant since, you know, UTMB? Has it been crazier than usual? I mean, obviously, you know, appearing on the podium just must bring a new level of, you know, madness, really.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was probably the thing that, yeah, I don't know, probably just caught me off guard a little bit post-race. Like, I knew, yeah, I mean, obviously getting on the podium of UTMB was going to be something pretty special with regards to the development of my kind of career, I guess, as an athlete. And, you know, I sort of figured it was probably going to maybe change the kind of the direction or the path that things were going, just because, yeah, I mean, I'd been fortunate enough to get, you know, third at the, you know, the biggest ultra marathon in the world. But yeah, it was just sort of, I guess just, yeah, we were in Chamonix for a couple of days after the race, initially just for the prize giving on the Sunday and things. And yeah, those couple of days were just, yeah, sort of crazy. I guess people who, yeah, wouldn't have even known who you were before the race all of a sudden did. And then, yeah, sort of, so just walking around the streets and stuff was pretty crazy. And then, yeah, just a sort of a lot of interviews and, you know, stuff like that. And then, yeah, social media was just going pretty crazy at the same time as well. So it was all, yeah, it was all pretty overwhelming sort of as it was happening. Yeah, I guess for me, sort of on one hand, I was, you know, thinking, far out, this is awesome. I just got on the podium of UTMB. And then the other part was kind of like, yeah, just sort of, I don't know, I just sort of felt like, oh, it's as bad as it probably sounds, I sort of felt like, oh, it's just another race, you know, like it's, yeah, I didn't really feel like it, you know, meant that things needed to change that much or were going to change that much. But, yeah, I guess it's just, it is what it is now. And, yeah, it's definitely, it's slowing down now. But, yeah, definitely for the first sort of, yeah, week or 10 days after the race was, yeah, definitely pretty busy with things.
Yeah. You know, I don't expect you to give away any trade secrets or anything, but has it led to opportunities and things that are going to make it better for you career-wise?
Yeah, for sure. I probably don't know exactly yet, but obviously with having a good result, it gives you a bit sort of more to go to sponsors with for next season, and definitely with regards to opportunities for sort of being invited out to different races and things since UTMB. So there's a list that's growing of races that could be potential for us to go to next year with regards to support for obviously getting to the race and doing the race and things. So it's definitely only going to mean good things, and hopefully if it can mean as time sort of builds, hopefully I can be kind of working a little bit less and maybe focusing a bit more on my training and on probably more so the recovery, then that would be fantastic. And in turn, that would kind of mean that if I'm not working as much, then I get more time with Liz and Sienna as well during the week, instead of having to tell Sienna that Papa's working, or Papa's got physio, or he's got massage, or he's out training. Because obviously, getting ready for, some of these long ultras, it's a pretty big time commitment. So, I mean, that's for anyone doing the race, regardless of whether you're trying to get on the podium or whether you're trying to finish. You have to invest some time into yourself if you want to get to the start line and then hopefully get to the finish line.
Mm. And because the coaching that you do is you're working, you're having to you're having to earn money and do a job as well as fitting in that training. So
yeah,
hopefully those opportunities will make things a bit better and get the balance back a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Fingers crossed. I mean, and I think regardless of what happens moving forward, I'll definitely still hold on to the coaching in some capacity, just because.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it provides income, but the other side of that is I just love coaching, and I don't think I could ever give it away because, I enjoy it so much, and I feel like it definitely gives me a bit of balance, kind of overall. And I definitely probably notice this the most if I, pick up a needle or an injury or something, and it means that I can't quite, kind of train or do what I want to do during the week. It's sort of means I can still, kind of be involved in the sport and start. Well, hopefully I'm not sort of dwelling on an injury or niggle too much, because there's other stuff that's kind of occupying my time, and other stuff that I can focus on for that sort of moment.
That often happens, isn't it? You hear of athletes who, when they do go full time, and they just sort of end up, it's not quite the same, is it? It's just sort of you need that balance in your life, and it's good to have other things to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I think it's, it's one of those things, you've just got to have balance in whatever you're doing, whether you're, a trail runner or a golfer or, a rugby player or anything, and for some people, yep, sure, they can go full time and focus all of their attention and kind of efforts onto being, the best athlete they can be. But for some people, they do need something to kind of give them a bit more balance. And I think for me as well, I think the thought of having kind of everything solely invested in, my performances, trail and ultra running. And I think just because of the kind of dynamics involved in the sport, that it'd be a pretty hard sort of thing to, maintain consistent that for even month after month, but let alone year after year. So I think it's good to have something else to kind of, keep things ticking over.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I, without putting pressure on you, do you feel like UTMB is a launching pad, that the performance there is a launching pad for you?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's the biggest stage, cycling, for example, if a cyclist wants to pick a race to kind of have a breakthrough race at, there's no other race than the Tour de France that would be the best race to do that at. There's obviously, other big, amazing races that are around that they can have performance at, but there's the one kind of big race that, kind of everyone knows about sort of thing. Yeah. And that's definitely the case for UTMB. It's sort of, speaking to, kind of not necessarily non-trail runners, but people who maybe aren't kind of, heavily involved in the sport. It's kind of like as soon as you say UTMB, they're probably going to understand or know what you're talking about in some kind of capacity. So, it's definitely obviously the biggest race. And then, with that, as I sort of mentioned earlier, with the UTMB week being so crazy, because of the audience that is, focusing on UTMB and the races and the expo and kind of the craziness that is UTMB these days, it's just such a, sort of great sort of, place for athletes to be and for you to kind of, get your name out there a little bit. And if you do have a good result, there are literally yeah, thousands and thousands of people that are there kind of, you know, seeing you and what you're doing and, yeah, sort of just, yeah, just such a big audience, I suppose.
Yeah, and in terms of performance-wise, does it give you confidence to think, you know, you can go higher at the podium, you can perform better in other races? Is it given you, I mean, it's, I guess it's still pretty early, but, you know, has it given you confidence?
Yeah, it definitely, like, yeah, I mean, this whole year, really, I've been, the confidence has definitely been building again, which has been really nice because whatever confidence I did have, you got completely blown out the back end in 2018 with having just a – oh, it was just a horrible season with – I think I had 5 DNFs out of 7 races, and the 2 that I did finish were, you know, sort of not really anywhere near performance-wise where I kind of had been in the past and definitely not where I wanted to be kind of moving forward. So, yeah, this year's definitely been sort of like a year just to kind of build back into things. And yeah, definitely. I mean, the confidence has been building throughout this year. I've had, I think even UTMB aside, if I had finished my year, you know, before UTMB started, I would have been really happy with how the year's gone. With the results I've had and just sort of how things have been building. And so sort of, I guess, add to that now UTMB. And yeah, it's kind of in a strange way, I sort of had dreamed and thought about, you know, getting on the podium at UTMB one day, but that was kind of a, you know, sort of 3 to 5 year plan with my coach. And yeah, so to sort of have it happen, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it's definitely just the confidence has grown even more now. And I think even probably more so than that, it's just the self-belief that, you know, like I'm now, when I'm thinking about races and what I maybe want to achieve, I sort of feel like now it's kind of like legitimately, you know, the results could happen. Whereas I think maybe before now and even, you know, last year and in previous years, you're sort of, you know, pumping your own tires up a little bit to, you know, sort of give yourself some confidence and stuff like that. But then there's always something in the back of your mind thinking like, oh, you know, is this actually possible? And could I actually do that? Whereas now, you know, getting on the podium at UTMB, it's kind of like, well, you know, if you do have a good race, then yeah, you can get on the podium at a big race. So, you know, it's, yeah, pretty exciting moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that self-belief is just so important, isn't it? I mean, you can do all the training you like, you can have everything in place, but if you don't believe you can, then, you know, it's just not going to happen, is it? So that's phenomenal. That's great to hear.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just such a massive part of, I mean, I think in any sport, to be honest, you know, as soon as your confidence takes a bit of a hit, yeah, it's one of those things. There's a period of time where you need to just, you know, kind of build things back up again. And, you know, it's kind of like sometimes when confidence does take a bit of a hit, then, you know, the kind of flow on from that with regards to other kind of parts of what you're doing, I think in sport and then and also in general in everyday life. And yeah, it's definitely, it's a nice feeling to have the confidence back because, yeah, like I said, you're pretty much for just over a year last year, it was definitely, you know, kind of non-existent. So, yeah, it's nice to be back on the trails and sort of feeling strong and, you know, sort of being able to back myself again.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, when we had that chat to you last year, it was obviously on the back of some performances that hadn't gone so well. And, you know, we could sense that there was frustration there. I don't know that we'd say that you were, I didn't detect that you didn't feel confident, but certainly we could hear the frustration in your voice and what you were saying. But, you know, it did, you know, to have done so well last year, notwithstanding the fact that you did have to pull out at UTMB, but you had worked your way up to fifth, that must have given you this, I guess, the kernel of belief that something like a podium finish was in you.
Yeah, it's definitely, I guess that's kind of the thing as well with this year is that, like, yeah, for sure, like, getting on the podium and actually finishing on the podium was, you know, like, it's amazing. But I don't sort of feel like it was completely from left field, you know. Like, no. I feel like I've had enough kind of results in races and performances, and whether the performances have kind of, you know, I've actually finished them off and got the result, or, you know, yeah, like UTMB last year being in fifth and then kind of not being able to finish it out. So, yeah, sort of, it didn't come from left field, but, yeah, sort of, I think with last year, it was sort of like I felt, you know, sort of like on one hand that I kind of had the tools that I sort of needed to use to get some good results, but then there was just always something that was kind of meaning that I couldn't achieve, yeah, the results that I wanted, or I couldn't perform anything close to the level that I wanted to be at. So as much as I kind of wanted it to happen and things, it just wasn't happening last year. So It's been sort of like I said with this year, it's just been, you know, kind of like a almost like a rebuild year in a sense that I, you know, needed to address a few areas with regards to kind of training and racing. And sort of definitely now looking back on the season and looking back on UTMB, it's really nice to, see some of the areas that were kind of my Achilles heel last year with races, that they, you know, weren't an issue this year. And I was kind of able to, in the end, have the result that I wanted. And then also on the same hand, I don't know if you've sort of heard or seen, but UTMB this year was actually quite far from the kind of perfect race that people maybe thought it was.
So
the way kind of UTMB panned out, and so I guess as well, that's what gives me even more confidence, is thinking like, you know, I was luckily enough, or I worked hard enough that I was able to get on the podium this year. But I feel like there's so much room for improvement based off how this year's race actually panned out. So it's pretty exciting moving forward into the 2020 season, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you touched on that there, and lots of our listeners will have caught up on what happened and geeked out a bit on your race. But, you know, we might as well talk about the details because, you know, as you say, it didn't go to plan. You know, it didn't go to plan A. I mean, you were back in, 39th place at one point?
39th, yeah.
And looking to pull out. So, I mean, being in the middle of it, how did it feel it was unfolding for you?
Yeah, it was the first 10K were amazing, you know, like the body was just feeling great. And it was just sort of, it felt like the start of a really good thing, you know, like I was running along, things were feeling super effortless. Looking at times and splits, we were basically, I think, a minute or two slower than the previous couple of years, which definitely I didn't feel was a bad thing. Things were feeling amazing. And then, it was basically on the downhill into Saint-Gervais, which is, I think, at around 16 or 18K. I could just start to feel my kind of hamstring and kind of sciatic nerve kind of niggle that I've had. That was pretty much one of the kind of, you know, major things that was hampering my season last year. So I could just sort of start to feel, you know, something, nothing kind of major, and, you know, sort of just, you know, blocked it out and thought about some other stuff for a while. And then, probably about 5K later is within running from Saint-Gervais to Le Contamine at 31K. I just felt like my sort of stride was being restricted a bit by the kind of hamstring and the sciatic pain that I was having, to the point where, I just sort of felt like I was just kind of losing a bit of power out of that left leg sort of thing. And, it's just getting sort of weird, tingly, numb kind of feelings, kind of from my hip down almost. And, it was pretty demoralizing, to be honest, to sort of feel, you know, like the training and the build up had gone, you know, had gone pretty well. We trained up at altitude for a couple of months. And so to have, you know, felt like I'd had a pretty solid build up and, feeling in pretty good shape, to then all of a sudden, like, you know, 20K into the race, I feel like I'm literally just, you know, swinging and carrying my left leg through as I was running. And,
jeez.
So things kind of, I guess, went from kind of, you know, bad to worse, I guess, in the sense that, the pain basically just got worse and worse, and the kind of numb, kind of weird, kind of tingling feeling that I was having in my leg. I just felt like, I just had no power in my leg. Like I'd be kind of running and then landing on that left leg sometimes, and it would feel like it was just sort of not going to give out on me, but it just sort of felt like it was almost struggling to kind of hold my body weight. So I'd sort of have to, you know, try and adjust my stride and adjust my sort of, you know, increase the cadence a bit more, so I wasn't sort of, you know, landing with as much force going through it sort of thing. And so then we had a really runnable section from Le Contamine to Notre Dame de la Gorge, which is basically where the first big climb of the day or first big climb of the race starts out of Notre Dame up to Col du Bonhomme. And in my head, I was thinking like, okay, this will hopefully be okay because I'm not going to be actually running, which is, you know, I'll have a shorter stride length and, you know, hopefully that'll take a bit of the load off the hammy. Because the left leg just didn't have all that much power, going up these, you know, steep climbs, and, you know, big steps and technical terrain and stuff. I felt that I was just ended up basically just, you know, sort of trying to thrust myself forward off my hiking poles kind of more and more, just trying to almost do more work with my arms than I was doing with my legs, just because, my leg just basically wasn't really sort of giving me too much with regards to helping me get up the mountains. So, Yeah, so that kind of went on all the way up that climb. And, yeah, I got passed by a few guys going up the climb, which, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, yeah, whatever, it doesn't really matter too much. You know, it's still early days. And then basically as we started the descent from Refuge de Bonhomme down to Les Chapeaux, which is probably, I think, from about 44 to 50-odd K down to the checkpoint, I sort of started shuffling down, but then as the stride kind of opened up a bit again, the sciatic kind of pain was just there. It just sort of literally feels like you're just sort of getting stabbed in the back of the leg almost. And yeah, just sort of got to a point where, you know, like a slow run turned into a slow jog and a slow jog turned into a very slow jog. And then basically I got to a point where, yeah, I was just walking downhill and people were literally, yeah, sort of, I want to say they were flying past, but they weren't even flying past. They were just kind of, you know, right, just running downhill how you'd probably want to be running downhill. And, yeah, it was just sort of got to a point where I was sort of thinking, like, far out, you know, I've given it, you know, 30-odd, 35K trying to, you know, kind of persevere with it. And I was just sort of thinking to myself, you know, at the end of the day, it, you know, like it's frustrating, but I can't really do much about it. And because I'd had the niggle for, yeah, like, basically all of last year, so I knew in the back of my mind that it can basically the pain can kind of go away as quickly as it comes on. And that's kind of the, I guess, the frustrating thing with nerve pain is that, you know, like, I mean, if you've got a broken leg, you've got a broken leg, there's no, you know, kind of hiding it. Or if you've, you know, dislocated your shoulder, that's it, you know, it's dislocated. And whereas with the nerve pain, it can kind of, yeah, it can just come and go. So I was doing this nerve stretch that I was doing all last year. So every, you know, sort of 10 minutes I was stopping and doing this nerve stretch, you know, I'd pull to the side of the trail and do it. And yeah, that just wasn't giving me any relief. And yeah, so but basically got into the 50K checkpoint after I'd walked at least a couple of K of the descent. And I kind of got in there, and initially, first of all, I walked into the aid station and then did a quick gear check. And then I was basically, it all happened pretty quickly. I was sort of just looking around for a volunteer to ask, basically, you know, how I can get back to Courmayeur and I need to pull out of the race, because, yeah, Liz and Sienna were waiting in Courmayeur for me. And it was literally, yeah, as I was looking around, yeah, a couple of mates of mine, Jason Schlab and Harry Jones, came into the checkpoint, and Jason sort of just said, "Hey, Scotty, you know, like, how you going, man? And, you know, just keep at it." And then Harry sort of just said to me and just said, like, "Scotty, like, you know, you just got to keep going, man." He's like, "You got so much time left to go." And the look on Harry's face, like, he just looked absolutely gutted, you know, like, he just looked so sort of devastated for me. And it was just like looking at, like, just, you know, making eye contact with him, I was just like, "Oh, Harry, you bugger. I can't pull out now." Because, I mean, Harry's a really good mate of mine. We stayed together in the same apartment in the build-up to Lavaredo this year, and we've spent quite a lot of time training and stuff. And, yeah, really good mate of mine. And to sort of have, you know, one of your really good mates, you know, sort of, yeah, just looking just gutted for you, you know, like, I was just like, "Oh, far out." And as much as I knew, well, at the time, as much as I knew that carrying on wasn't going to be overly fruitful, just because, I mean, like, this sciatic pain, like, I thought if it was going to go, it would have gone by now. But yeah, so I just sort of thought, "All right, stuff it." So basically downed a couple of cups of Coke and shuffled out of the aid station. And then my plan was to basically just, yeah, sort of walk and sort of try and jog up the road, and then wait for Harry to catch me. And then I'd just basically try and hang on to him for dear life, for as long as I could. And then hope that someone else that I knew was coming up behind Harry and I could sort of chat with them and hang with them, just to, you know, kind of make the time pass getting to Courmayeur. And then, yeah, basically as I started climbing out of Les Chapeaux on the road, I'd started kind of jogging and then, like, you know, sped up a little bit and started running. And within probably within like 400 meters, I reckon, I was running along thinking, like, "Oh, hang on a sec, like, I can't feel my hamstring, can't feel the, wow, like, sciatic stuff." And yeah, so I was kind of like, "Okay, this is kind of cool." So I just sort of, yeah, but you basically run on the road for about, yeah, 4K up a pretty steep road hill, to be honest, before you get onto the single track. And so I started running, and I was running up there, and then I thought back to a course recce that I'd done with a few mates. And during the recce, I'd run really well going up this rope climb. And so during the race, I was thinking, like, man, I reckon I'm moving just as quickly as what I was during the recce. Like, this is kind of weird. And basically from there, the hamstring kind of side pain, it didn't come back for the rest of the race. So it was just whether it was, you know, the break from running when I was walking down the hill to get to the checkpoint, and, you know, I spent, probably a good, I don't know what it was, probably 4, 5, 6 minutes maybe at the checkpoint, and downing a few cups of Coke and just sort of having a bit of a breather. And so whether that was kind of enough just to, you know, get a bit of the load off the hammy and kind of free things up a bit, I'm not sure. But
So you don't know what it was that it's not like you took a magic bullet or anything that changed things, but something changed and the pain disappeared.
Yeah, and so that was the thing with the sciatic stuff that I've been having the last kind of 12, 18 months, is that it does, like even during kind of like training blocks last year, like I'd have times where it would just be horrible for, you know, like I'd go out for a, you know, 5-hour training run and I'd feel it within the first 200 metres and then it'd be there right till the end of the run. And then on the flip side of that, you know, like, you know, a few days later I could go out and do, you know, I don't know, another 2-hour run or something like that. And basically I wouldn't feel it at all. So there's just no real consistency as to kind of, you know, kind of why, well, I mean, when it comes on. I mean, there's definitely some stuff that I'm going to be working on now moving forward, and I need to be a bit more diligent with regards to strength and conditioning kind of stuff to, you know, hopefully keep things at bay. But like I say, whether it was because I'd, you know, walked for a few K, which, you know, probably would have been a good sort of 20 minutes walking on that downhill, just gave things a chance just to kind of relax a bit and, you know, maybe not put as much pressure on the nerve, I'm not sure. But, I sort of didn't know exactly why I'd decided to go now, but I definitely wasn't complaining. So I carried on with my race from there.
Wow. So, I mean, a couple of things for people to take away out of that, one of which is, you know, I keep thinking about you, you know, looking at Harry and, you know, if it hadn't been for him really and Jason, race probably would have been over, wouldn't it? And then also the fact that you persevered for 35K with that pain, that's remarkable.
Yeah, it was just sort of, something I'd been, one of the kind of things that I'd kind of changed with this year, one of the issues that I, oh, not issues, maybe one of the areas that I wanted to basically be better at this year was mentally during races. Yeah. Like, I sort of, you know, I thought about it and I chatted with my wife Liz and would sort of, you know, I sort of said to her and would discuss, like, you know, what's the point in being in, you know, good physical shape, training really hard, and then, you know, getting to these big races, and then all of a sudden I just didn't have the kind of the mental capacity or the kind of the tricks and the tools that you can use as an athlete during these races to, you know, kind of get the best out of yourself from a race perspective. And whether that's, you know, an athlete trying to, you know, win UTMB or whether it's an athlete trying to, you know, just finish a race, at kind of some point in time during these races, you know, your back's going to be up against the wall and you're going to be questioning, you know, the whole kind of, you know, why am I doing this? Do I actually enjoy running anymore? Like, running sucks. Like, why am I here? After the Lavradio Ultra Dolomites race at the end of June, basically the Ultra Dolomites race, so I ended up third place there, but the way that race basically panned out, I was in the lead with another guy from Catalonia, and we were basically climbing, and then just before the sort of top of the first big climb, he put a bit of a surge on, and literally within a split second, I was basically there waving the white flag saying, no, this isn't sustainable, this is too fast, like I don't want to go, and I basically like didn't give myself the opportunity to see what could happen next. You know, like I just basically, I basically just gave up before I even gave myself the opportunity to see what could happen. And so basically, long story short, I guess, is after the race in at the end of June, I ended up started speaking with a sports psychologist every week. So every Thursday would catch up. Danielle Snyder, she's based out of the US. And so we basically, I sort of reached out to her and we, started chatting every week and, you know, sort of initially just discussing what had happened at the Lavaredo race and then sort of discussing, you know, just things we could do moving forward and some stuff that I could practice in training and all that kind of thing. So the whole thing with like UTMB with when my leg was playing up, it was something that Danielle had kind of like really tried to instill in me and kind of make me remind myself was like, basically just give yourself a chance, you know, like the if I'm still in the race, then I've still got a chance to turn things around. And like, especially at a 100-mile race, because obviously even for, you know, even for Power, who won the race in, you know, 20 something hours, like he didn't have a race where he felt absolutely amazing the whole way, you know, like he, you know, he had, I know for sure he had moments in the race where he was feeling pretty rubbish and, you know, really having to, you know, kind of work hard and deal with things to, you know, try and turn things around. So I think for, you know, for any athlete, that whole kind of, you know, mental kind of side of, you know, trail and ultra running is definitely an area that, yeah, I think not enough people kind of focus on.
Absolutely. And that's like no matter where you are in the field, isn't it? That's, you know, I mean, I've gone through those moments myself. Not that I've, you know, not in terms of the winning or losing of a race, but just in terms of, you know, getting to those moments where you just think, this sucks, I'm not enjoying this. And you do wave the white flag. But, you know, that's a great, to have had the perspective and self-recognition and self-reflection to recognize that is great.
Yeah. And it was definitely hard early on, you know, like being a, you know, 32-year-old bloke who probably hides his feelings a bit too much sometimes to, you know, all of a sudden, you know, kind of open yourself up a little bit to someone who initially was a complete stranger. Mm. But it's just one of those things, you know, like I sort of said to Liz beforehand, I sort of like said to her, like, you know, what happens if I get, you know, close to the podium of UTMB, which funnily enough did end up happening. What happens if I get to that point? And then I'm kind of just like, well, what do I do now? Like, how do I actually close out this race and make sure I stay on the podium or stay in front or whatever it might be? And so, yeah, just through talking with Danielle and working with things and just really developing that kind of mental resilience and strength and some stuff that I could use on race day to help, you know, help me kind of along my way to achieving, you know, what I wanted to achieve. And so, yeah, all of a sudden, you know, kind of like I said, even when things started to turn around, like literally from 50.5 kilometers into the race when things kind of, you know, started feeling okay, like I still had, you know, 120 kilometers to go in this race. And so there was, even though I was feeling okay, like by no means was the race even remotely close to being finished. So, yeah, there was still a long way to go and still, you know, a lot of kind of, you know, ups and downs and, you know, a lot of really important decisions to be made with regards to kind of effort on certain, you know, uphills and downhills and, you know, sort of making sure I was focusing on all the small things like nutrition and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, because I guess that's, you know, once you do start moving through the field, the opposite can happen, can't it? You can maybe get a bit excited and mess up things like nutrition or, you know, just or go too fast or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And that was one of the things I was reminding myself, because basically pre-race the plan was to get to Courmayeur, hopefully in and around the top 10. So then presuming I was feeling okay, I could basically, you know, maintain things basically then until Champs-Élysées, which is at about 125K. And then the plan was basically, yeah, from 125K at Champs-Élysées, that was when UTMB actually started, which is, again, it's kind of crazy to think like, okay, like your race starts at 125K, but in the past, you know, like people have been in they've been winning the race there, they've been on the podium there, and haven't ended up winning or been on the podium by the finish line, because there's, you know, there's still three monster climbs to go from there. And, you know, if, depending on whether you're feeling good or not feeling so good, you know, things can change so much there. So, yeah, even as I was climbing up to Col de la Seine out of that 50K checkpoint, you know, I was just sort of saying like, hey, this is, you know, awesome that you're passing people, but, you know, keep things pretty controlled, because, you know, there's such a long way to go. And so, yeah, there was definitely a lot of kind of talking to myself and talking myself through things and, yeah, basically just trying not to force anything or not to rush anything, because I knew that could kind of, you know, end up being something to come back and kind of haunt me.
Yeah. There's just so many decisions you make, isn't there? I mean, you know, in one sense, running is just putting one foot in front of the other, but, you know, the other sense in a race, like, you know, in an ultra race, you've got so many decisions to make and so many decisions that can, like you say, come back and bite you on the backside.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's sort of with as well, even just with, you know, downhills and stuff like that. And that was something that I was definitely mindful of as I was, yeah, basically building into the race and catching a few people, is like, I remember vividly like telling myself, you know, like I'd look up and see the next head torch and think, okay, like basically you're next. But then on the same hand, I was like you don't have to catch them straight away. Like, you know, and one guy in particular, I can't remember his name, I'm an American dude. Basically, I looked up and saw his head torch in the distance, and I literally told myself, like, okay, you don't need to catch him now. Just try and catch him by the top of Grand Col Ferret, which was probably, I was probably about 12K later.
Right.
And so by sort of telling myself that and keeping it kind of fresh in my mind, it was going to mean that I wasn't going to do anything stupid with trying to, you know, start bombing down hills and running really fast on undulating stuff to try and catch him. Because, you know, for any athlete, you know, even for anyone trying to finish a long race, you know, like if you push one downhill too much, that can be the beginning of the end of your race, you know.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Again, doesn't matter what end of the field you're at, if you push too hard too soon, or push too hard on a certain descent, or even on a certain climb as well, then, you know, you can, you know, put yourself behind the eight ball, and then you're forever trying to, you know, get out from behind it, sort of thing. So it's important to, you know, obviously be sensible and make sure that, you know, even if you are feeling amazing, you know, there's too often a long way to go in these races, so you got to play it pretty smart.
Yeah, and that's interesting to hear that, you know, even at the point in the field, you do have to practice patience and be patient. And so the work that you did with Danielle, I mean, it's not just a matter of having a chat once a Thursday. That I imagine you had to put a whole lot of things into practice, like in your training, so that you had that toolbox ready to go when you needed to draw on it.
Yeah, it was sort of initially it definitely took some kind of thought, you know, like I was really having to, you know, kind of think about what I was doing and what I was thinking about during training, and just sort of creating this really, initially just a really happy kind of space, I guess, for, you know, in my head when I was running, and, you know, obviously just, you know, staying positive. And then also, you know, a lot of visualization kind of stuff, like, you know, and I had visualized, you know, what am I going to do if things turn to custard in the first, you know, sort of 50K of the race. Obviously, I hoped that it wasn't going to happen, but, you know, being, you know, prepared for that and having kind of like a bit of a game plan if something does happen, you know, I don't think it's necessarily negative thinking in the sense you're like planning for something bad that's going to happen, but,
sure,
you know, by having some skills and some things to think about and some, I guess, procedures in a way to kind of go through and tick things off. I guess I made it to 50K with this kind of, you know, dodgy kind of hamstring sciatic stuff, but, you know, like honestly, like I could have quite easily pulled out in Le Contamine at 31K. It would have just been easy to get into Le Contamine and sort of, you know, think, okay, like I've persevered with it for, you know, 13 or 15K. Obviously it's just not my day today for whatever reason. I'm just going to pull out here, but, thankfully, you know, like I didn't. And also, yeah, coming into Le Contamine, Liz definitely reminded me that there was no way I was, you know, going to be pulling out at Le Contamine, which was awesome. And so I guess by having that kind of, just being in a, you know, kind of a different headspace, like I feel like if this year's UTMB had have happened last year, like I would have for sure pulled out at Le Contamine. But
wow.
Just through, like I sort of just through talking with Danielle and also with my coach, David Roach, we've sort of just created this, I guess a slightly different mindset from last year and probably previous years, to be honest, where, you know, it's not all about the racing all the time, you know, like, and sometimes it is just, you know, bringing things back to basics and, literally just trying to kind of bring back the fun into running, whether that's training or racing. And so, yeah, definitely, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you know, definitely helped kind of shape this year's, you know, UTMB result.
Brilliant. I mean, that's so fantastic to hear. You talk about bringing the fun back into it as well. And the other thing I'm hearing is that you've taken quite a methodical, really thoughtful approach to not only to UTMB, but to your whole training and the way that you're preparing and living, you know, family life and so on as well. But, you know, one of the other changes you've made is around nutrition as well.
That's been, to be honest, like the nutrition side of things, that was what was basically stuffing up every race that I had last year, you know, like the hamstring and sciatic stuff, you know, I mean, if I slowed down, you know, enough, like I could have a short enough stride length or whatever it was to basically be able to kind of shuffle along. Whereas the stomach kind of stuff I was happening, it just got to a point where I couldn't get any nutrition in. Along with that was basically ending up needing, I was drinking so much water, like just getting so dehydrated especially when I was racing, to the point where I'd be, you know, starting, you know, downhills and I'd just be having like you know, a litre or a litre and a half of, you know, fluid in my stomach just kind of bouncing and sloshing around, just, you know, causing havoc sort of thing. So, basically this year, to be honest, it was probably around November, December last year. Basically we were, sitting at the drawing board thinking, okay, like, you know, I'm not going to give up ultra running, which definitely did cross my mind. Several times last year after, you know, sort of trying to persevere with things. Coming into this year, I knew, and I just sort of thought to myself again, like I kind of mentioned earlier, like, what's the point in, you know, training, getting into pretty good kind of physical shape if my stomach's going to be the thing that lets me down, or if my kind of, you know, mental kind of, I guess, capacity or focus is going to let me down. So I knew that I needed to, you know, change some things, and nutrition was a massive part of that. So I got in contact with the nutritionist Steph Gaskell from Adelaide, and we basically just worked through a few things, and she sort of tossed up a few different ideas for different food options and stuff, which was quite a lot different to what I had been doing in the past. Be able to test those out of the Hong Kong 100 back in January, which was actually on my birthday as well, which was pretty cool.
Brilliant.
But to have a kind of a different nutrition plan, you know, obviously to try and practice for it to work, you know, the whole race. I didn't have any stomach issues at all during the Hong Kong 100, and touch wood, every race this year that I've had, I haven't had any stomach issues, you know, whatsoever. Actually, there was once at UTMB, I think probably about 10K to go, I took a double espresso flavored gel, and it was just the flavor that kind of surprised me a bit. But literally apart from that, I was basically able to eat and drink all day, and was super happy with, you know, how the nutrition was going, which was awesome.
Brilliant. And there's always the proviso that nutrition is so personal, isn't it? I mean, one thing that'll work for someone won't necessarily work for somebody else. So with that in mind, but you, I mean, I think I heard that it's sort of a plant-based approach that you've taken. So not just race nutrition, but in you know, general life as well.
Yeah, so that was I'd been vegetarian for a few years, and then I think it was around April last year. I knew I couldn't have any kind of milk, kind of dairy based products, milk, cheese, yogurt, all that kind of stuff. It would just my stomach would just go into havoc mode. So I'd already kind of taken out that. So we were basically. We're basically, you know, full plant-based vegan for quite a while, to be honest, but I was still eating eggs.
Yeah.
Kind of just got to a point where I don't know if I was just sick of eating eggs every morning for breakfast, but I just sort of thought, I'll stop eating eggs for a while and, you know, just sort of, you know, eat some other stuff just to change things up. And then, we caught up with a friend of ours, Dan, who's been sort of plant-based for I think about 8 or 9 years, and I chatted with Liz, and we sort of thought, well, we're going to be, you know, hanging out and staying with Dan for a couple of months now, like, why don't we just try seeing how vegan goes, how plant-based goes. And so we just kind of went from there, and I just noticed I was just kind of feeling better and better, and I think the, like, my recovery just felt like it was just just getting better. Like, I felt like I was just bouncing back after training runs and races better than what I had used to. And again, whether that's specifically because of my diet, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not going to go out and preach to everyone need to, you know, be plant-based. And if someone wants to go and have a steak or some sausages, then by all means go for it. You know, like, for me, you know, like, I mean, it's definitely, like, if I'm honest, like, it's definitely, it is becoming a bit more about the environment and about the animals, but initially, and definitely most of it for me is just performance-based, you know, like, I'm literally wanting to eat and fuel my body with whatever I need to basically feel the best for, you know, everyday life. But then obviously a big part of that is training and racing. And, you know, for me at the moment, that's a plant-based diet. And that's what's working for me. And, you know, for some people it's going to be, you know, meat and three veg, and, you know, that's totally cool as well. It's,
that's right.
You know, it's definitely, you know, like you sort of said with nutrition on race day, there's something that works for everyone. And, I think that's important for people to, you know, kind of realize is that there's no, you know, one single approach to nutrition. that, you know, that is going to work or isn't going to work. So it's just a case of just kind of, you know, trying things out and, you know, trial and error and just working out, what is going to be best for you.
And just being aware that, you know, just because it's something's not going right, you can change it and try something else and hopefully you come across an definitely. Answer like you did.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, Scotty, I'm just conscious that we've taken up a lot of your time, but I did just want to fire a couple of Andrew McDowell, who also raced at UTMB and looks after sound for us, and you know, he was 35 hours and had a great time over there. I asked him, is there anything you want to know from Scotty as someone, you know, who's, you know, taken part in a race, in the race itself, and you know, is there anything you'd ask him? And he was wondering, one thing, maybe some tips or techniques on how to move downhill quickly and lightly, because he was sort of blown away by how complicated the terrain is and, you know, unpredictable rock sizes and just how steep it is. Do you have any tips on how to do that?
I mean, lots of practice. and I think in that is just, you know, when you are training, and myself included, to be honest, you know, like sometimes you end up inadvertently kind of running on nice kind of groomed, you know, rolling kind of terrain or whatever it is. But yeah, just kind of, I think in training and in the build up to these races, depending on what you're doing, just exposing yourself to either similar terrain that you're going to be on race day, or B, actually get on some terrain that's actually harder than what you're going to be on race day, if you can.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that's going to be different for everyone. And, you know, if you're living in downtown Auckland, it's going to be, you know, maybe a little bit harder to, you know, get onto some crazy kind of technical stuff, depending on, you know, where you're living and what you can get access to on weekends and stuff. But yeah, that kind of thing is definitely important, just to make sure that you are kind of trying to, you know, simulate, you know, terrain that you are going to cover on race day. And that obviously goes for, you know, the climbing and the descending as well, with regards to uphills and downhills.
Yeah. That race specificity.
Yeah, definitely. And the other one as well was, just actually practicing things, you know, during training, you know, form kind of stuff. You know, like I'm always telling my kind of coaching clients and stuff to, you know, focus on fast feet, you know, feel like you're kind of dancing your way downhill. And you know, sometimes, you know, telling people, you like, you know, tell the, you know, 10-year-old you how you would probably run down the hill. You know, like you look at kids running and they just run, you know, fearlessly, and they're so light on their feet and so nimble, and trying to kind of, you know, replicate that. Obviously, you know, we don't have the bodies of, you know, 10-year-old kids with the energy and the elasticity that they've got, but yeah, definitely, you know, trying to stay light on your feet, thinking about fast feet, increasing the cadence. And with that as well, when you are having kind of like fast feet and increased cadence, what it does is it just gives you more options with regards to foot placements, because you're not having a longer stride and you're not kind of finding yourself getting caught in between, you know, kind of foot placements, because you have got a longer stride, so there's more time before your next foot's going to hit the ground. So you can kind of, you know, be a bit more, you know, kind of, I guess, be a bit more lateral with your movement as well. Like there's no, obviously with some of these long technical downhills, there's no one way to go down. So, you know, if you do have the fast feed and you have got a bit of lateral movement, then you can kind of, move to the left of the trail for a bit, and then you look up, you know, move across to the right a bit. And also on that, even just the process of, you know, looking up and giving yourself that, you know, that information, knowing kind of what's coming up. I'm constantly myself, as an athlete, but also, you know, for the clients I coach, telling people to basically practice looking up ahead when you can safely, you know, like practicing looking up, give your brain that information so you kind of know what's coming up next. Because, you know, I mean, a lot of trail runners would have experienced that sort of feeling when you've, you know, you haven't been on technical terrain for quite a while, and then all of a sudden you jump onto some technical trails and you feel like you've got two left feet, and, you know, you can't quite kind of make those decisions quick enough. So, yeah, it's like anything, you know, the more you kind of practice it, and some of the kind of smaller skills within, you know, technical trail running, the more that you can practice those, you know, the more kind of comfortable they're going to feel. And also, you know, the more second nature that, you know, some of these things are going to start to happen.
Yeah, so just conditioning your brain is, and getting I guess muscle memory going as well. Is there any what about sort of strength work? Is there any sort of particular gym work for you know, for your legs or anything that you'd recommend to be able to be more efficient on the trail?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like obviously, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways people are doing strength and conditioning and stuff like that. And I mean, for me, a lot of it is, you know, like I'm in the mountains a lot. So I guess a lot of my kind of so-called strength and conditioning, you know, is coming from being in the mountains. But yeah, I have a couple of like sort of little exercise routines that I'm trying to include, you know, at least once a week, twice a week during kind of, you know, the middle of the season sort of thing. And sort of, you know, some one-legged stuff and some more dynamic stuff. Yeah, there's a really good on the Trail Runner magazine, there's a 3-minute mountain legs routine, which again, I think for a lot of people with the strength and conditioning side of things, it's kind of something that seems to, yeah, kind of fall by the wayside, because it's, you know, like, I mean, obviously people are placing more priority on the actual running component of getting ready for these races. And, you know, as life gets busy and everything else that goes with it, it seems like, you know, strength and conditioning kind of falls by the wayside. So I think for people, you know, like if you're really kind of, you know, in a good routine and you have the time and everything, then yeah, sure, you know, you can do a bit more with things, which is absolutely fantastic. But I think for a lot of people, if they can do these kind of, you know, shorter kind of, you know, well, this one's a 3-minute routine, or there's also my physio in the Blue Mountains, he has a website, the Body Mechanic Locker Room, and he basically has like a 10-minute sort of kettlebell routine. So for me, it kind of means that I know that I can basically spend, you know, 13 minutes and I'm going to get a really good specific strength and conditioning routine, that's going to, you know, obviously, you know, make me stronger and, you know, sort of, you know, develop on areas that I'm basically going to be kind of needing, you know, during races, whether it's uphill or downhill kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely important to add as much in, and also trying to, you know, not just do the stuff when you've got an injury or a niggle, because, you know, as soon as anyone up an injury or a niggle, all of a sudden the strength and conditioning and the, you know, your exercises go to the top of the list. You know, you're the best client, you know, your physio loves you because you're doing all these exercises, and then as soon as you can kind of start running again, they kind of, you know, fall by the wayside a little bit. So
did you just say,
and then to be honest, I've been a little guilty of that this year, and I probably think that that's part of the reason why the kind of hamstring sciatic thing did come back this year, because I definitely got a bit lazy with the strength and conditioning kind of stuff, and yeah, just wasn't placing enough priority on it, because yeah, training was going well, racing was going well, so yeah, I sort of neglected that side of things a wee bit.
Did you just see me blushing, Scotty? Because I've had plantar fasciitis issues that, you know, I've been working away diligently on my exercises, but as soon as they, you know, it starts to come right, you do just sort of slack off a bit, don't you?
And yeah.
But, you know, you do, and then you pay the price. So it's, I mean, yeah, I'm kind of heartened to hear that you do that as well.
Yeah, I know. You know, at the end of the day, all of us, you know, all of us trail runners and athletes, you know, we've got two arms and two legs, and generally, you know, we're all kind of experienced the same thing. Just, you know, just because some people run different a bit faster scale than others doesn't mean that we're not dealing with the same stuff. So I definitely, definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Just another question that Andrew had, and I'll let you go soon, but he was wondering how many matches were spent running an 11-minute 3K at the start. That's insane.
Yeah, it's
I guess you have to, though, like, don't you?
Yeah, you kind of have to. Like, to be honest, like, the most dangerous part of UTMB is the first 200 meters.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you have to. I mean, I think it was last year, Alex Nichols from the US, he got tripped basically, like, less than 100 meters off the start line, you know, fell over, I think banged his knee up or something up, and, yeah, that was his race over. So it's, yeah, it's pretty, to be honest, that's probably the most nerve-wracking part of UTMB is, it's just getting out of Chamonix, kind of, you know, not having,
one piece,
you know, fallen over or been stabbed by a hiking pole or something like that. So, yeah, it's and a lot of people actually commented on that this year, because basically within the first couple of K, me, Pao, and Chi Min, the Chinese runner, like, we'd basically, like, pulled away from everyone to the point where, like, I kind of looked back and, like, a couple of hundred meters, and I couldn't see anyone behind us on the trail. But it was, I don't know what had gone on last year with the other, you know, 2,000 runners had made a pact to go out really slow or super slow, because, like I said in the beginning, like, we actually got to Lazouche after 10K slower than the previous 2 years, because, yeah, I'd been, you know, interviewed and stuff after the race and everything else, and people were going, oh, and, you know, you guys took it out really hard and fast, and I was kind of like, yeah, it might look like that, but it really, really wasn't. Like, we were running slower than what we had in previous years, so... but in saying that, like, we it's still running pretty fast. Like, I think we do the first 10K in 41 minutes or 42 minutes or something with 400 or 500 meters of elevation gain. So it's definitely pretty quick, but it's all, you know, it's all relative. You know, like, if you if you got, you know, Eliud Kipchoge running that first 10Ks, you know, he's going to do it in 32 minutes without batting an eyelid kind of thing. So it's, yeah, it's all just relative to, you know, the athlete and, you know, your training and everything else. And, yeah, it's just one of those things you kind of do have to, you know, kind of get out of town and get into a rhythm. And then it kind of feels like with UTMB, yeah, the race doesn't really start and kind of settle in until you get to, you know, kind of Le Contamine, which is, you know, 30-odd K. And it feels, you know, relatively hectic kind of up until then sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you have to do specific training for, you know, with that in mind, thinking I'm going to have to run an 11-minute 3K and then, yeah, and then try and definitely. Get my breath back?
Yeah, like some athletes probably more so than me, just because of my build up for this year's UTMB, was more focused on just consistent training and things. And so, yeah, I actually only did two specific hill sessions from mid-May until UTMB. So I only did two hill sessions, and the rest was just, yeah, the rest was literally just, you know, 2 hours in the mountains or 5 hours in the mountains or, you know, a couple of races that I had added in as well. But in saying that, yeah, my coach David has a real focus on basically adding in running strides, whether they're, you know, on the hills or on the flat, just getting that kind of leg turnover and working on running economy and stuff. So, you know, when I'm, you know, doing those strides and, you know, doing, you know, 30 second strides and I'm running, you know, just under 3 minute K pace for that 30 seconds, all of a sudden running, you know, 4:15s on an undulating trail feels pretty comfortable sort of thing. So, yeah, it's just all sort of working on that economy and, yeah, just getting your body. Yeah. And it's sort of relative to what I was saying before about getting on terrain that's more technical than what you're going to cover on race day. The same as those strides and obviously from that building into, you know, kind of, you know, faster efforts with intervals or tempo and yeah, running at speeds that is faster than race day.
Wow. Brilliant. Hey, Scotty, thank you so much. We, as you know, we usually ask everyone for a greatest run ever, but, you know, we asked you last time and also since then you've had this amazing result at UTMB. So I'm not going to ask you that again, but I did just wonder if I could ask you just if you could reflect on what it is about UTMB and maybe, you know, when was the first time you really started to dream about the moment that you, you know, that you achieved just the other week?
Yeah, I mean, UTMB, it's just, yeah, like it's the big dance, you know, like I refer to it as that all the time. And I think part of that is it's just, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, got the most kind of the biggest audience, you know, a lot of glamour and prestige and everything else. And then add to that, because of that, you know, it seems to kind of draw the biggest athletes in the world. And yeah, I guess for me, I'm, you know, I love running and I love being out in the mountains and kind of, you know, that side of things, but also I'm, you know, a super competitive person as well. So I'm always wanting to, yeah, kind of just see how I compare to, you know, the best athletes in the world. And yeah, so to, yeah, sort of, yeah, come third at this year's UTMB was just amazing. And yeah, something that I'll definitely cherish and remember for a long time. But then also on the same kind of token, you know, like I did finish, you know, quite a wee way behind second and first place. So yeah, it's definitely, I'm definitely not resting here. There's, yeah, definitely, you know, definitely a lot more work to be done and hopefully I can do, you know, a couple more than two key sessions between May and August, next year. But, yeah, there's definitely, I feel like there's a lot of room for improvement. And I, strangely enough, even though I've been kind of, I guess, doing the sport for, you know, 6 or 7 years now, yeah, I feel like this is literally the beginning, you know, like I feel like I'm a new athlete now. And yeah, sort of, yeah, the confidence and the outlook that I have now is has changed a lot in the last couple of weeks. So yeah, I'm definitely excited for the future and for the training and yeah, obviously the races are gonna come, you know, sort of moving forward. So it's yeah, definitely pretty exciting times.
Brilliant. Well, we can't wait to see what you do next. And you know, just congratulations, massive congratulations, and you know, well done to you, but also, you know, the team around you. You've described some of them, you know, today, and thank you for passing on that knowledge to people of all abilities. But, you know, most importantly, I guess Liz and Sienna, and it was fantastic to see you guys, the three of you, enjoying the fruits of all that you've worked as a team, as a family, towards for all that time.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. It's been cool to share it with them all. So, yeah, and that's the thing. I think, you know, there's plenty more to come. You know, like UTMB's been in common, but
you know, I'm still a trail runner, and I'm still gonna train and race, and yeah, hopefully there's gonna be, you know, more and more experiences like we had a couple of weeks ago moving forward.
Sure there will be. Brilliant. Hey, thanks for your time, Scotty.
Awesome, thanks so much.
Thing with someone like Scotty is, you know, and it does tie in really nicely again because Jamie Walker is Scotty's dad, who coaches the Speed Freaks, and that's amazing too. Is that he's really relatable.
Yeah.
Like, and especially for a dude who's doing the big Euro races, you know, there's something quite, you know.
He's very natural.
Yeah.
He's very natural, and it just felt like chatting to you, you know? The ups and downs that you go through, and it was really, he's just such a relatable person. Yeah. We talked
time
about,
I came third at UTMB.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, Laredo, what a race.
Yeah.
So thank you, Scotty. He has given us a link to the, he mentioned the strength workout that his physio has put on online.
Yeah.
The one that he does. And so I've asked him for that, and so he sent us the link, so we'll put that in the show notes, and he's given us some more details around some of the people who've helped him. So tap into that advice that he's given, and get into it. Thank you so much, Scotty, and we can't wait to see what next, because we know that this is just the beginning, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you to you lot for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. Email dirtchurchradio@gmail.com.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Spotify, and you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com. You know, also, if we're not where you want us, let us know. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. Also, if you'd like what you see, please spread the love. It would be great as if many people heard the show as possible, and for that, we need your help. Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you.
Even if we take a few months to get around to it, sorry.
That's right. Uh-huh. Thanks to our partners, sponsors, Ultra Spire, Further Faster, Spring Energy, and CLE Athletics. Thanks to our editor, Kieran. We've got some really, 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 really good guests lined up.
That's deep, isn't it?
It is deep. We've actually been reshuffling because we did shoehorn Scotty in, and it feels like an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. So, really great guests lined up. And thank you for listening, Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.